Welcome to Entheo Nation, where we feature visionaries who are pioneering the cutting edge of awakening. Psychedelic science, modern shamanism, neuroscience, new paradigm lifestyles. Get ready to harness the power of visionary states and forge reality into your wildest dreams. Hello, beautiful visionaries. This is Lorna Liana, host of Entheo Nation, where we explore the intersection of psychedelics, shamanism, and visionary culture. One of the themes that I've been observing in the plant medicine world is the quote-unquote conversion of psychonauts into neo-shamans. What I mean by this is the phenomena of Westerners seeking a psycho-spiritual experience through psychedelic plant medicines in a ritual context, who then continue to explore shamanic practices themselves, opening to a vibrant, bizarre, and intriguing world of paranormal experiences. So while I can tell by Entheo Nation's episode popularity that the episodes that address the psychoactive drugs seem to be the most downloaded and played episodes, I do want to include conversations about the world of shamanism itself with shamanic teachers and practitioners who do not expressly use visionary medicines. And this is because many of the shamanic practices discussed in these conversations are relevant to psychonauts who may now be having to readjust their way of navigating day-to-day reality with an expanded paradigm that includes interactions with the unseen world, especially those people who do not feel right after ceremony and are now having to seek integration support that goes beyond psychotherapy, such as soul retrieval and entity removal. Today's episode is a conversation with Christina Pratt, founder of the Last Mask Center in Oregon and the host of the Why Shamanism Now podcast. As an experienced healer and modern shaman, Christina is here to talk about her practice in the last 30 years and what has directed her path in life. We explore a range of topics around shamanism and uncover what the qualifications, communications, and responsibilities are for professional shamanic practitioners. We are going to dive into the arguments in the shaman sphere that waste time instead of creating positive change, the challenges that arise when shamanic practices are blended cross-culturally, and the shaman's responsibility to the world and his or her community. Don't forget to stick around for Medicine Music for the Soul, where this week we are featuring the medicine music of Murray Kyle, who I had the pleasure of meeting up with in my favorite haunt in Nevada City, California, the Nectar Barn. Links to music, resources, and people mentioned can be found in the show notes at entheonation.com/34. Are you ready to join the evolution? Sign up for our newsletter and receive our free guide to navigating visionary states, along with 8 email lessons on how you can harness the power of your sacred visions. As a VIP member of Entheo Nation, you'll receive invitations to join life-transforming retreats and mind-expanding programs. Just go to entheonation.com/iTunes to join the tribe and receive your free gifts today. Hello, beautiful visionary tribe. This is Lorna Liana. I'm here today to speak with Christina Pratt, who is the founder of the Last Mask Center in Portland, Oregon. And she's the host of the international internet radio show, Why Shamanism Now? She is the primary shamanic healer at the center specializing in soul retrieval work, ancestral healing, and the primary teacher of the Cycle of Transformation, a 4-year training program in shamanic skills for the new world. So I'm really excited to have Christina here to talk about what it means to bridge paradigms, because we have these teachings and traditions that many of the indigenous cultures have protected and carried for millennia, and then we have
people in the modern, you know, urban world seeking to connect with these teachings, and how do we practice these teachings in the modern context? So welcome, Christina.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here and honored.
So I would love to hear a little bit about your story. How did you get connected with the shamanic path, and how did you arrive at teaching this 4-year cycle of transformation that you teach now?
Well, for me, I arrived accidentally and reluctantly. Like most Westerners, I did not have any schooling or education in how to communicate with spirit directly. And so I was asking, I was thrashing around in my life in my at 30, late 20s, early 30s, and asking, why am I here? Meaning, why am I in Manhattan? Why am I at this audition? Why am I in these choices I've made for my life? And what I didn't understand is that if you ask, why am I here, the spirit world is going to take that at its highest interpretation. And so in that time of questioning, and a lot of time on my knees, because it was not an easy time in my life, I had a spontaneous break with reality and had an experience. I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't have any context for it, but it changed me completely and profoundly. And I was already in certain transformational teachings, so I knew about personal change, but this was quantum levels different than what I was able to create through my own personal process. And so all I knew after that experience was this was probably the most profound thing that would ever happen to me in my entire life, that I was completely changed for the better, and I had no idea what had happened and what it meant. I didn't have any context for it. So I spent the next number of years, on one hand, trying to understand what had happened and what did it mean and what was the point and a lot of questions like that. But on the other hand, particularly in the months following that experience, there were a lot of steps on the path that came in very hard and clear. Some days now, 30 years later, I wish I could feel that clarity again. But at the time, I needed also to be making big course corrections, though, in my life. And so there were big steps and big changes. And so anyway, down the road, I read an article which was the very beginning of when Sandra Ingerman's Soul Retrieval article was published and then republished in every single publication that we had back then. And in those days, they were still paper, right? And so anyway, so it went viral in the old way. So I read this article about doing soul retrieval work, and I had a profound sort of moment of understanding that was the next step. So I learned how to journey so that I could do that, not having any understanding what any of that meant. So by learning to journey, I could finally effectively communicate with my helping spirits. So that whole level of confusion and what's going on started to sort out very quickly as I learned to ask questions, get answers, interpret the answers, apply them to my life, make a mess out of my life, realize I didn't interpret it properly. You know, I mean, I had to learn that whole process. But eventually, I got better at communicating with spirit. And then through that experience, not only did I develop my shamanic healing practice, but the teachers began to come through. And so the 4-year training came through in my relationship with my helping spirits. And so I'm grateful for the people that taught me some basic skills in the beginning so that I could start to have a more reliable working relationship with spirit. But in all of the training that I've done with indigenous people, I've mostly learned to be a better person, learned to be a better practitioner, and learned what questions needed to be asked. But the teachings that I teach are not drawn from any of those cultures. They're really drawn directly from my own experience with my own helping spirits. So that's the crazy, chaotic, very contemporary, without any sort of context or elders way that I got here. And wow, it was confusing.
Wow. So I have so many questions emerging from that story. The first one is, do you mind sharing with us what that, you know, that break experience was like? Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm old. See, I'm old. So I'm old enough to have missed SSRIs and medication. And so consequently, I was allowed to have what would have been considered a mental break with reality and not be medicated. I'm like just old enough that I missed that wave where otherwise I would have been yanked out of my life experience that I was having and put on some sort of really powerful pharmaceutical, which would have changed the path of the experience I was having.
Absolutely. And I just want to share with you, I resonate with that because when you start to see spirits and like these start to really become bothersome, you know, that was one of the solutions that was on the table. And I'm really glad that I decided to not pursue that solution and instead check myself into a Tibetan meditation center and the shamanic practice.
People can actually define your experience in a different way. So for me, I was far, far away from home and all the people that knew me. I was in Manhattan, which is a city it's very easy to go crazy in and nobody really notices. So I was, you know, sort of accidentally in a situation where I could have a break with reality and have this experience I was having with a particular initiatory helping spirit while I was going through the motions of my daily life in Manhattan, which was completely different at that time. So all of the normally animate parts of life, like human beings, took on very scary, strange proportions. And all of the inanimate parts of life, it was a bit like a very scary Disney episode of cartoons where all of a sudden all the inanimate objects start talking and singing and dancing. And so that whole, the thing about my experience, because I've actually talked about this in great detail with a lot of psychologists at conferences and things like that, because they get this opportunity to ask me questions about an experience that was 3 days long. So, you know, it was coherent experience. But the difference was throughout all of it, I knew I was not experiencing reality. I was trapped in a different reality I couldn't get out of, but I was very aware it wasn't my ordinary reality. I just couldn't get back to my ordinary reality, and I was aware there wasn't really a going back. There was more of a going through, and I frankly didn't know how to go through. I mean, I had no preparation for this experience at all, but the simple fact that I was actually not raised in a Western religion. I was not raised in any of the revealed, you know, religions that are pretty much running the world right now. I was raised as a Unitarian. So I thought I was being tested or schooled or challenged and was pretty sure I was failing at that. But I never once thought I am now being judged. I am good or this is good or bad, or this is some sort of battle over my soul, some sort of religious context of what was going on. I never thought about it that way. I just thought I'm being tested and I'm failing. So... which was kind of a new experience for me. So part of it was I also didn't have the kind of stories in my head that would really force me to misinterpret that experience, which is part of what allowed me to have it on my own terms, in a sense. I don't know, that wasn't really in my own terms, but basically to have it with just have a struggle, am I crazy or not? Without any other religious context to that, any good or bad soul, any, you know, going to hell, any of that. It was just, am I crazy or not? And so it was sort of simplified, I guess, from that sense. And I really only barely made it through that experience because it became very clear that if I didn't find a way through the experience, well, one, there was no going back. Two, if I didn't find my way through, I would stay functionally crazy and thus not useful to the world. I mean, and you know, crazy is a delicate word to use, but I really wasn't useful. And that was the sense of, I mean, I feel like there's an aspect of shamanic work that's kind of useful crazy. And then there's another kind of being crazy where you're harmful to yourself and you're harmful to other people and you're not able to do your purpose in the world at all. And that's the point. That's not useful. So that's what I was really seeing is, am I going to be a burden on other people and not useful? Or am I going to find a way through this experience? And now looking back, and this is the other thing to understand, this is a lot of years of reflection. At the time, I didn't know what the hell was going on. But when I look back at it, what I see is failure, an ego death. And then out of that death, some other version of myself rising up. And it was totally like Aliens, where the thing jumps out of his chest. I mean, it was really like that. It was really
I've had one of those too.
Like this part of myself rising up out of this dead heap and just blurting out an answer to this helping spirit. And the helping spirit, I still remember the look on her face was just kind of like, good enough. Like, not really very good at all, but just good enough to get through. And it was really like, really literally just good enough. And so it was only after that then that I was able to start to have a relationship with that helping spirit as a helping spirit versus just the insanity of my life. You know, just the stupid, repeating the same stupid patterns, you know, making the same mess out of your life and not really getting anywhere, which was what I was doing before this experience happened. So after this experience, there are other parts to it, but basically the point was I was really different. Mm-hmm. My experience of life, but nothing had changed. I still had 42 cents in my pocket and no job and was trying to get a dance job. I mean, like nothing externally had changed at all, but I had completely changed. And then when I was completely changed, everything else started changing in response mm-hmm. to that. And then within that, because my life really was still me trying to be a dancer. So within that, the steps to moving me towards shamanism started coming into place. And then a couple of years down the road, there was a big crossroads of, you know, what are you going to choose? Are you going to let go of the dancing and go to shamanism? Or are you going to, let go of the shamanism thing and still try to dance? You know, so there was that piece along the way as well. So mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that experience, because I think many of us in this audience have had really unusual extrasensory or, you know, otherworldly or out-of-body experiences that in the process of trying to make sense of leads us to a path of, you know, shamanic practices.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd love to ask you a really juicy topic that has come mm-hmm. up recently for me in, you know, with many different individuals in the shamanic community. And that's the question of, you know, how do you know if you are qualified to teach shamanic teachings? Mm-hmm. Do you need to have a certification? Do you need to have been passed a, you know, fire by a, you know, indigenous chief or like medicine person? Or do, you know, it sounds like for you, you received your body of work that you now teach through a spiritual experience. So I'd love to know your thoughts of, you know, the qualification.
Yeah. It's kind of a complex topic. I think it's, like you said, it's a juicy topic. And I think for me, the most important thing in terms of my experience, you know, and that's the only thing I have to go on is my experience and then my education, because one of the things I did was write an encyclopedia about shamanism. So I have also an academic understanding of a lot of shamanism I don't have any personal experience in. And then I've also traveled and experienced, you know, so I have a lot of different context for this response. But I think the important thing is, for all of us, no matter where we come from, no matter what our lineage is, we all have, as human beings, we all have the capacity and the right for a direct relationship with spirit. Mm-hmm. And that what worldwide shamanism offers is many ways human beings have learned over the years that help us make that direct connection with spirit and working relationship that's effective. Not just me praying and hoping for an answer or waiting for a big dream, which are all wonderful things, but it doesn't get the job done on a daily basis. You know, I need to be able to go to my helping spirits as my work group who are going to show up today and answer my questions today, not months from now with a big dream, right? And so that aspect of that really is the characteristic of shamanic work, which is that the practitioner is working in relationship with spirit. That, you know, that's the and through that, accessing altered states in which things happen that then affect our reality here. Like those three things are really important, because if we're not talking about all three of those things, we're not talking about shamanism. We're talking about other wonderful, mystical, interesting things that can happen. But those things are, you know, really define this particular experience. So my point is, A, as human beings, we all have the capacity to make that connection. And as adults, I believe we have the responsibility to maintain a relationship with spirit to help us make better choices in life. So then who's the shaman, right? So I believe every adult should have a working relationship with spirit. And 97% of the cultures on the face of the planet agree. Mm-hmm. 3% don't. America happens to be one of those ignorant 3% doesn't believe that we actually, that having the capacity to enter an altered state keeps us sane, helps us grow up, helps us make better decisions. It isn't a sign of insanity that having a working relationship with spirit is part of a mature spiritual human being. So anyway, that's a whole nother topic. But that's my point, is that nobody owns that. There's no appropriation to be a human being and forge your own working relationship with spirit. That's on us as human beings, and it's equally available to all human beings. Now, cultures have their way of doing it that belongs to that culture, and that if we have not been educated and invited into that culture and literally given permission to use that culture's way of doing things, then it's not ours to take and we're stealing it if we use it. It's that, you know, appropriation is that simple. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people that get invited in and get taught by cultures that are not of their own lineage and have very respectful and beautiful long-term relationships with Indigenous practitioners and are given the right and the responsibility to carry teachings forward and teach them. And I'm certainly not going to be the one to tell someone they don't have that just because they've got the wrong color skin, right? You know, I mean, we have to get past that and understand that culturally, people within that culture get to decide who has the right to do it. And if they decide someone of a different lineage has the right to offer their teachings, you know, hands off, they do. I don't get to decide that. At the same time, I think Westerners that think a certification from other human beings defines them as a practitioner are very ill-informed. Because if you look at shamanism globally, the human beings aren't defining the shamans. They're the spirit. The relationship between the person and the spirit defines who the shamans are. The human beings just acknowledge. Mm-hmm. As a shaman who's already been initiated by spirit, I can see that experience in you and acknowledge that and publicly acknowledge it so the culture can accept you as it. But the shaman, the Indigenous shaman, isn't initiating the person. They're acknowledging initiation that has already occurred between the person and spirit.
Ah,
that's the subtlety people just keep not wanting to deal with because
I
it means
that.
There's a whole bunch of Westerners then that can't claim they've been initiated just because they showed up and paid for a workshop, because it's about a function happening between a person and spirit, which can be observed only by people that have already experienced that function, because nobody else can see it unless you've already experienced it yourself.
Are you a spiritual seeker intrigued by the insight, healing, and transformation that visionary medicines offer? Do you feel called to work with sacred plant medicines, but don't know how to begin, let alone where to find a qualified shaman? Or perhaps you might have had a life-changing experience at an ayahuasca retreat center in Peru, and are confused about how to integrate all your cosmic downloads with your day-to-day life back home. And what would really help with that journey is the support of a community of people who work with visionary medicines on a regular basis. If this sounds like you, check out Spiritual Evolution with Sacred Plant Medicines, an online program designed to help you receive the highest transformation. Just go to entheonation.com/spiritual to view the course curriculum and receive a special 10% discount just for being a podcast listener. Simply apply the coupon code ENTHEO10, that's ENTHEO10, to redeem your 10% discount today.
It's so interesting. When I spend time with the tribes in the Brazilian Amazon, I was talking to some of my Kunakuin friends, some of the shamans in the tribe, and they were saying that, you know, there are certain visions that you receive that indicate that you've advanced to a certain level.
And exactly.
The animal spirit will show up and give you a certain thing. And when you receive that, then you're ready to continue at the next level of training.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then how do you see that? You can't really see it. It's all happening in the visionary state.
Right.
The shaman knows and his apprentice knows, and they talk about the dreams and their visions, and then they interpret them.
And what's really interesting for me, because I can nerd out about this quite a bit, but there's certain traditional teachings around shamanism, for example, the Sangoma tradition in South Africa, where actually, as you go through the training, your experience in the training starts to define the kind of practitioner you'll be. And there's never this expectation that if 10 people start, 10 people are going to all go to the same place, because the whole point of it is that your relationship with spirit is interacting with your own unique genius, mm-hmm. your own special gifts you bring in this life. And what is the most beneficial way in which this unique person can engage with this training and their gift and then bring that to the world, bring that to the community. And so not everybody is expected to come out cookie cutter exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And that some people will have, you know, profound skills as a diviner, but not necessarily great skills in plant medicine or profound skills as diviner, and not ability to actually go on the soul retrieval journeys or to deal with the dead or, you know, these different practices. So in some cultures, there's really high specialization. In other cultures, not at all. You know, in the Amazon, you will do plant medicine. Right? I mean,
and there's different kinds of plant medicine shops.
Exactly.
There you've got like the ayahuasqueros, and then you have the perfumeros who work with the perfume, you know, the flower, fragrant, you know, plants. Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating.
Right. It's a huge, huge cornucopia of plants and medicine that they offer. And so for me, this whole conversation of who gets to be a shaman, I would love it if people don't even engage in that conversation until they've educated themselves. Because it's really a big answer in a sense. And so, you know, part of it is to recognize there are contemporary shamans who are part of a tradition that is their own lineage that is basically unbroken. I mean, that's hard to say about anything these days on the planet. There are contemporary shamans who are part of an indigenous culture that have been trained in a way that allows them to be a bridge to the Western world. So they're indigenous, but not. Mm-hmm. Right, completely. And then there's people in the Western world that are being awakened to their potential, sometimes spontaneously in the middle of Manhattan, like I was, and sometimes by visiting these other cultures. I mean, one of the things I don't usually talk with people about because it's such an intimate experience, but that my spiritual awakening came going to Ecuador, you know, big, profound shamanic culture, going to Ecuador as a dancer. No interface with shamans, no interface with that part of the world, but just by being there on the land, it all started. And everything else came after that. And so, you know, my point is for many people, going to these places activates something within them that would have probably lain dormant or come out in a really distorted way had they not followed that crazy idea to go to wherever and experience the people, the land, the teaching. So there's lots of different kinds of legitimate contemporary practitioners. And as within all things going on here in the world, there's also people that are just flat out fakes, you know, but there's that in medicine, there's that in politics, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's not any different than anything else human beings participate in. So I don't personally, you know, the problem that shamanism suffers with is that as a profession, one of the oldest professions on the planet, mm-hmm. it was treated by the Western world as being completely fake and completely a bunch of charlatans and jugglers, as they used to say.
So worshippers.
Right. And so shamanism is still trying to kind of recover from very organized, very systematic demonizing and discrediting that went on globally. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. So there's also, you know, so there's this, it's easy to call a shaman a fake. And then you can say, well, because you're appropriating or because you're white or because you're this or you're that, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm really bored actually with that whole conversation because the world is burning, people, you know?
I know, right? It's time for us all to wake up, stop arguing about these things.
Yeah.
Because it can activate the inner shaman.
Right. Because what matters is this person effective in helping people to transform in the world? Are they using their gift in a way that inspires others to use their gift? Are we coming up with any medicine that's going to fix any of the great illnesses of our time? That's all that matters. And the rest of the argument is just like getting people of color to argue that racism exists. So they spend all their time arguing so they can't actually deal with changing anything, right? It's like, I'm tired of debating what does shaman mean.
Oh my God.
Because it wastes our time. We've got work to do. Mm-hmm. You know, children are being killed. You know, PTSD isn't being dealt with. Our medical system is so ill, it doesn't even know it's sick. I mean, there's lots of work to do. Mm-hmm. So can we like get together and start doing it instead of fighting each other about who's a shaman?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Okay. Gauntlet has been put down on the table. All right. So I want to ask you this because there's a lot of focus, obviously, on the healing that comes with, you know, shamanic practices and shamanic rituals. Now, I'm curious to know your thoughts. Okay. So we can engage, like, let's say if we, you know, connect with shamanic traditions and ceremonies to heal ourselves, is the work done with our personal healing? Or do you feel like it's important as a practitioner of shamanism to think beyond ourselves and actually try to heal the world or heal our communities or mm-hmm. something bigger than ourselves?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two things to that. But to go on that line of thinking, I think the most important thing, because I started out just figuring it all out myself the hardest way possible and making every possible mistake. And my real clarion call in the beginning was, come to do the transformations and the healings necessary to know your soul's purpose and then bring those gifts into the world. And so it's not enough to know it yourself. You got to give it to the world. And that was absolutely the main thrust of my work for easily the first almost 2 decades. And as I aged and got better at what I was doing and had more students doing it and understanding it more fully, my own understanding awakened as I realized that the cosmology of these teachings actually requires that we go beyond our own personal transformation. That if we actually understand those healings and those transformations and what it means to bring your gifts to the world, there's only one reason to do it. It's for those who are coming. And so it's not just me and my soul's purpose here in this moment now. Yes, I do need to do that, but I do that with the ancestors behind me pushing. Mm-hmm. And pushing me to do it in a way that I'm not making the same mistakes humanity's been making for the last 3,000 years. Right, that I learn from those who have gone before me, and then I innovate where things need to be innovated, and I carry traditions forward where they need to be carried forward, and I can discern the difference with that. And so that's a huge piece. But the other piece is the descendants in front pulling these gifts out of us so that they're here for them when they get here. I mean, imagine right now how your descendants would feel inheriting this mess we're in today. They cuss us as ancestors. It's terrible, right? Mm-hmm. I want my descendants to feel that I've honored them. And so I believe absolutely it's so much more than our own personal healing. It's about doing our own personal healing so that mm-hmm. we can bring our gifts to the world, so that we bring the gifts to the world in a way that starts to affect these huge social and cultural issues that are going on our planet right now, environmental issues, that we can't call ourselves the shaman of our time if we are not dealing with the illnesses of our time personally and culturally. And honestly, let's get real, people. Most of the personal illnesses people are dealing with are caused because of the culture we're living in. Mm-hmm. If we don't change the culture, we'll never be able to address the roots of the epidemic of mental illness and so many physical illnesses that just have to do with the fact that we're eating and drinking and doing what people are marketing at us. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's so much that is about showing up because we are the culture, right? So I am that culture that is creating the very illnesses I'm working so hard to transform. And so part of it is for those of us who could do enough personal transformation or bring our gifts to the world in such a way that we can begin to start shaping a new culture, meaning a new way I live my day. A new way that I engage with people around me and that I really allow what I'm learning from spirit to teach me to be a better human being in everything that I do, not just when I go off to my shamanic circle and talk with my friends that agree with what I agree with, but when I'm at the gas station, when I'm maybe making a choice not to actually buy gas today, but to ride my bike, that it begins to impact everything that I do, because then I'm starting to change my culture. Because I'm starting to change the way I live my day with all of my choices every day. Where do I shop? How do I spend my money? All of that talks about how I live my life. That's the revolution that needs to happen, is how we choose to live. And our shamanism has to affect that, or it's not really working. Not just about me and my soul retrievals,
Hey there, visionary. We really need your help. Entheo Nation is on a mission to raise public awareness of the therapeutic potential of psychedelics and visionary plant medicines. We do this by creating consciousness-raising content, which we give to the public for free, and this costs money. That's why I'm asking you to play an active part in the psychedelic renaissance by supporting Entheo Nation on Patreon. Your patronage allows us to create more podcasts, interview more experts, research and write in-depth articles, produce videos, and offer unique educational products for visionaries just like you. All you need to do is go to patreon.com/entheonation. That's patreon.com/entheonation, and browse our mind-expanding rewards and choose your monthly pledge. take a stand for cognitive liberty and spiritual freedom by becoming an Entheonation patron today.
So is this what you're describing right now? Is this how we as shamanic practitioners can become the medicine of our time? Or do you mean something else by that statement?
I think there's two pieces of that, which is in terms of people that are really particularly called to shamanism. I think that the piece there is that we recognize whatever it is, we are engaging in shamanism in a way that's very different than when I first came in. Because when I first came in, very little was available, very little information was available. And everybody was trying it sort of like, let's see if this works. Do I really have a helping spirit? Like, oh my God, I have a helping spirit, right? You know, it was still very exploratory. So now the second wave kind of comes through, which is we can go at experiencing the shamanic practice with a basic understanding, this is going to work if I can just figure out how to engage with it properly, versus do I have a helping spirit? It's like, no, I know I have one. I just need to figure out now how to communicate with it. You know, so it's really changed. But I feel like now we're in a place where, yes, I know I have a helping spirit. Yes, I have skills to communicate with it. And I need to now look up and out and recognize, what is my time asking of me? I chose to incarnate at this time. What is it that my unique gifts can bring to what is going on in my time to make this a better world for all living things? Because that is the fundamental uniting sort of energy of all shamanic practitioners and shamanic people, is what is good for all living things, right? And that is not the kind of choices my culture is making, right? We're polluting our fundamental water supply. I mean, like, don't even, you know what I mean? So a piece of it is, how do we, as people that have kind of gotten through those first two waves, you know, we're not back at, oh my God, I have a helping spirit, but you know, we got one, we're not afraid to use one. We actually have a sense of what our purpose is. We feel ourselves living in that in the world. We're becoming, you know, a beacon that tends to attract people. Okay, now how do we begin to go forward and look at things that are the ills of our community? And how do we begin to change that? And so this brings us into that dovetail of why our culture is the reason we're ill is, so what we need to begin to tend in a culture that's broken is, how do we begin to tend the births? How do we begin to tend the initiation into adulthood? That alone would solve so much of our drug, pharmaceutical, mental health, depression problems in our culture if we just initiated our young into adulthood. But who are the adults to be initiated into? Right? There's no one to initiate them because the adults are acting like children. So anyway, so the gates, you know, the gates of birth, the gate of initiation, and the gates of death. Another big problem we're dealing with is there's way too many dead people still hanging around because they don't know how to die anymore because nobody's helping them cross over. You know, so all of these issues speak to a culture that no longer does the culture's job for the individual. Mm-hmm. Yet we still expect the individual to be giving to the culture. And so it's setting up not only the me being the medicine for the culture, but I need to be able to begin to build a culture that's creating the context to support me as the individual. Like, that relationship needs to be rebuilt. So, which leads me to the last piece I was saying, which is the problem with us going into indigenous cultures to learn from them, is we are leaky buckets because we don't have the same cultural reference that they have. Now, granted, many indigenous cultures have been fairly well damaged by colonization, so there's a lot of problems on both sides of that argument. But we go without a cultural container that helps us to hold these experiences. We go, we have the experience there, and we come home, and a lot of it just kind of leaks away because we don't have a way here at home to have a culture that holds us well as individuals. And so that's a really big piece that we could start doing is, you know, when we ask the question, you know, how do I bring these Peruvian teachings home? How do I bring, you know, concepts like Aini home? People go, oh, well, that's just too hard to do. That's not an option anymore. We have to figure it out. How are you going to figure it out? You're going to start asking your questions to spirit, because that's how people, indigenous cultures, figured out in the first place. Every indigenous culture had a first shaman who said, how do I do this? That's where the teachings came from, right? As a human being who just asked the right questions and taught people, and they asked questions. And over time, this whole culture, this whole beautiful shamanic culture and cosmology evolved. But it began with people just like us saying, how do we do this? This isn't working. How do I do this in a better way? And so that for me is the becoming a medicine piece, is recognizing our cultural context is different than those of the indigenous people. How do we deal with that? How do we bring shamanism in a way that is real and vital in the culture that we're in? How do we address the fact that nobody knows how to hold energy and be a good container for the ritual in the first place? It's like really simple, basic things, but they change everything if people can get educated around that. And it's not okay anymore to say, well, it's like that when I'm there in Nepal or Peru or Siberia or wherever, but then I come home and it's America and blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's not okay anymore. That's not a pass. We have to ask the questions. We have to say, and this is what I loved about the indigenous people I have studied with, is their perspective was exactly, this is how we do it here. These are the answers we got from our land, from our nature, from our helping spirits. These are the questions you need to ask, because you can't just import this. Mm-hmm. Different land, different helping spirits, different nature, different everything. But these are the functions that need to happen. So go home and start asking the questions. How do we perform this function in the most effective way possible as this group of people in Portland, Oregon, or this, you know, group of people in Arizona? It's going to be different questions whether you're in Florida in the bayou or whether you're on a mountaintop. I mean, but the same functions need to happen for the people. And we have to start trusting that the indigenous practitioners who have held these teachings, bless every single one of their hearts 5,000 times over for hanging on against, in many cases, impossible odds to hang on to these teachings. I mean, but we cannot necessarily just import things that we may need to learn from them. Okay, this is the ritual. This is the function it did. Now I need to go home and trust that I have a valid relationship with helping spirits, and I can ask them, how do we most effectively perform that function here on this land at this time with these people? And some of it will be really similar. Some of it may look exactly the same. Some of it will be different, because the cultures are different. And this, to me, is the most interesting thing about being a contemporary practitioner, is that creative piece, that innovative piece, and that recognizing my relationship with spirit is the core of my shamanic relationship, not my relationship with an indigenous teacher, but how that indigenous teacher has taught me to be connected with my helping spirits and bring teachings through that are authentic and vital for these people that maybe I've never done a fire ritual ever, never even considered it. So how do you work with people that have no idea what it is to be with grandfather fire? Not a clue, right? And then the other thing, I'm sorry, but this always gets me whenever I do ritual. I do a lot of ritual, and I love doing ritual work, and I feel that the rituals are effective. But the bottom line is, I will never have the luxury of standing there with my people around the fire and know that everybody shares the same stories about where we came from and why we're here, the way you would if you were an indigenous practitioner. It's a luxury to think everybody actually has the same idea here. As a Westerner in America, people all different colors, all different traditions, all different practices, all different spiritual practices, different religions, different ages, different everything. You, as a practitioner, you have to create an energetic container that's big enough to hold all that diversity. And that, you know, that's something indigenous people mostly don't really have to deal with that much. We have to deal with it all the time. We will never have the luxury of knowing everyone in our circle just believes the same thing about the world. Never once. For us, it is all about diversity and how we work with spirit to understand how to make that diversity the great strength of our time. And right now we're mostly just sort of bypassing it, I think, generally speaking. And that we need to recognize this is the piece of medicine indigenous people didn't have. And this is what's going to make the innovations in our time for our cultures that are really to be that medicine for our culture this time. Is diversity isn't the problem. It's actually the answer. It's like the key ingredient that's going to catalyze that medicine. I believe. I mean, I don't actually see any other way it's going to work.
This is such an intriguing conversation, and I have a lot to really reflect upon too, especially the whole question of how to bridge paradigms, how to bridge traditions and cultures. It's always a very interesting journey and also challenge when I go down to the Brazilian Amazon. Mm-hmm. spend time with my Indigenous friends, and then, you know, seeing how they interact with the non-Indigenous people and being sensitive to, you know, their experience as well, mm-hmm. and coming back here, and it's just a whole different world. So I think, you know, in reflection towards what you're saying, for me, I think one of the main challenges and skills to develop as Western, you know, modern Western shamans is the mm-hmm. ability to bridge paradigms in a lucid, you know, positive and mm-hmm. way. All right, Christina, we're coming to the end of our session, and I really want to ask you to share with us a burning question that I've had. So mm-hmm. during this conversation, you've mentioned many times about helping spirits. So is there a way that you can share with us some practical tips on discovering who our helping spirits are? Do we have an entourage, or is it just, you know, is it one mm-hmm. like totem animal? And then how do we start to communicate and cultivate a relationship with them where we're getting guidance so that we can be in our highest good?
Well, I think the first place for people to start is to recognize that our helping spirits are part of our relationship with nature, with the natural world. And so for most of us, we have to unplug and tune in. We need to take some time and start to connect with the elemental energies, with the land spirits around us. For me, it started in Manhattan. And I just treated Manhattan like an environment. I mean, I didn't have any money to buy anything, so I just looked at stuff that was in the store windows as the pretty things and the pretty plants and the not pretty plants. I mean, it was just whatever environment you're in, you have to stop mediating your life through technology and actually be in your environment. Because if you're in your environment, then you start to get in your body, because your helping spirits are trying to communicate with you in your body. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that people really miss out on. And so the healthier and more, the better energy hygiene you can have about being in your body, the easier it will be for you to tell the difference between random junk and actually a message from a helping spirit. You know, there's a lot that can be going on. And if we're not doing anything to maintain our energy hygiene, who knows what's talking to you and why? Right. So those are two things. One is you got to take some time and unplug, connect into the natural world, beginning to offer gratitude for your life, for your day, you know, to be in a gratitude practice or a gratitude attitude of, I hate the fact that that rhymes. But anyway, my point is your heart, the more entitled we are and disconnected, the less our helping spirits can give to us. And those are sort of where the culture's sort of going. So we have to roll back from that and really be in gratitude and not entitlement, and to connect into our body, into our life, into our energy in the moment. And then the thing about helping spirits is they come in so many forms. And if you're alive now, you have them. Because it's really hard to keep a human being alive. And so we have help. We have tons of help. It's just most of us don't talk to it. We don't communicate very well with it. And so for most of us, when we first connect with helping spirits via journeying, which allows us to bring our whole dreaming body self into that interaction with the helping spirits, and it's a repeated practice that anybody can learn. And so when we learn shamanic journeying, and it allows us to enter into a relationship with our helping spirits, most of us recognize, oh, it's you. You know, you've been here since I was a child. So there's often a familiarity and an awareness of our helping spirits, although sometimes some people are afraid of their helping spirits, largely because they're afraid of their power and that our helping spirits are here. There's one primary helping spirit that is with us no matter what your calling in life is. This is not just if you're a shaman, just you're a human and you're alive. So you have a helping spirit who is with you to assist you in living your soul's purpose. Because it's not a known thing. It's a creative endeavor, and we need help. And so everybody has at least that helping spirit. Now, most people also have a family lineage kind of helping spirit of some kind as well. That is, and they're all protective. They'll also all help us. And so everybody has at least that amount of help at the very minimum. Most of us have more, although some cultures tease people and say the more helping spirits you have, the more work you have to do. So is that perspective. But I think the important thing is for people that are working in Indigenous practices that don't tend to use journeying, and I've studied in a couple of those, that as contemporary people, it's helpful for us to still have journeying so that we have reliable helping spirits and familiar helping spirits so that we can get a better sense of what is going on when we're in a very foreign world with exotic things going on and we don't really know what's happening. It allows us to have kind of a debrief with a helping spirit that we know is really here to guide our soul's purpose. So for example, I think that I've met people that do take advantage of going down to South America and doing ayahuasca, which is a wonderful thing to do, but they have no other relationship with spirit. Ayahuasca is the only spirit they've connected with through the medicine. And they interpret that experience as ayahuasca has chosen me to bring ayahuasca's message to the world. And but if they had a personal helping spirit that they journeyed to regularly, that helping spirit would help them understand their ayahuasca experience in a way that would be more fruitful for them, instead of just sort of misunderstanding everything through your contemporary cultural lens. So I really encourage people to cultivate that, no matter what their, particularly if they have a particular indigenous way of going into their practice, because it always gives them that interface that we sometimes don't have that helps me as Christina understand more accurately what's really going on versus dragging it through my lens, which may be really misinformed. So that's my sense of why learning to journey can be helpful for anybody practicing, because it helps us more quickly work through the misinformation and misalignment we carry in our minds, which we can't help but carry as contemporary Westerners. Mm-hmm. For me, it's an important interface, particularly for people that are working in shamanic practices that don't tend to use journeying. It can save you years of pain and confusion.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing with us your deep research and your knowledge about shamanism and being able to speak about all the different cultures that you've had a chance to study or experience. It really helps this conversation of what it really takes to be a modern shaman in our, you know, complicated, you know, high-tech world, and you know, how do we integrate the living planet, you know, and the elemental energies around us with, you know, what we need to do to like navigate society and our jobs and technology and all of those things that have become part of our reality. So thank you so much, Christina.
You're welcome. Can
you tell us about your free gift that you have for us?
Okay, so the free gift I have can be found at whyshamanismnow.com. And actually there's a many podcasts there about shamanism, but these were particularly gifts about learning to craft questions. And there's two episodes about crafting questions when you speak with spirit, which kind of connects with what we were just talking about, is, you know, how do you begin to communicate with spirit? How do you craft questions? How do you engage in an effective way? So these two podcasts are talking about how would you not make all the mistakes I made and communicate with spirit in a very question-driven, focused way. And so that's what the podcasts are about. And you can just go to whyshamanismnow.com and click with those links there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And how can our audience best stay in touch with you?
Okay, so I can be reached. My website for my classes and teachings is lastmaskcenter.org. And I can be reached as Christina@lastmasscenter.org. And the calendar is there on that website. And so the podcast website and the Last Mass Center website are related. But I can be reached best through Last Mass Center.
All right. Thank you so much. And you have a beautiful rest of your evening, Christina.
You too. Thank you very much. I'm honored.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us. I will now leave you with Arrow to the Sun from the album of the same name by Murray Kyle. If you like the song, I encourage you to support this soulful artist by following the link to his Bandcamp page where you can purchase his music. You can find the link in the show notes at entheonation.com/34. Wishing you a beautiful rest of your day, and bye for now.
Walk with me now and now, hearts they're beating. sun, heart, calling, walk with me now, for we have begun. Arrow, sun, heart, calling, walk with me now, for we have begun to warm. Fire, these ancestral burnings that your father carried in his bones and wore. Fire, these ancestral burnings that your father carried in his bones. Wahiena. Calling, come walk with me now, for we have begun to walk by the fire of these ancestral burnings that your grandfather's father carried in his bones, and walk by the fire of these ancestral burnings that your grandfather's father carried in his bones. Why, yeah, now. Idle now that there are dreams to bring. Living here upon this earth, we grow in like a seed, and the leaders will follow when the people lead. We will not be silent when there are songs to sing. We will not be idle now that there are dreams to bring. Living here upon this earth, we grow in like a seed, growing stronger. Ancient wisdom flowing free. Ayana ye, ayana ye, yo yo yo. Ayana ye, ayana ye, yo yo yo. Ayana ye, ayana ye, yo yo yo. Ayana ye, ayana ye, yo yo yo.
Drawing on the knowledge and the wisdom, we move through this.
will awaken and you will see and notice. Simply living in the harmony, I bow down to this. Ancient wisdom flowing free. Ayana ye, ayana ye, yo, yo, yo. Ayana ye, ayana ye, yo, yo, yo. Ayana ye, ayana ye, yo, yo, yo. Be silent when there are songs to sing. We will not be idle now that there are dreams to bring. Living here upon this earth, we're growing like a seed. And the leaders will follow when the people lead. We will not be silent when there are songs to sing. We will not be idle now that there are dreams to bring. Living here upon this earth, we growing like a seed, growing stronger in the ancient wisdom flowing free. Yo, yo, yo.